In this week's episode of Zen Founder, Sherry interviews Brad Hart. Brad is the founder and CEO of Make More Marbles, which is a company dedicated to helping entrepreneurs through messaging, mentorship, and masterminds. But before we dive into the interview, I have two things for you. The first is I want to thank Bean Ninjas, which is an accounting firm comprised of location-independent entrepreneurs, and they focus on location-independent entrepreneurs. And Bean Ninjas was generous enough to sponsor Sherry and I and to buy a copy of our book, The Entrepreneur's Guide to Keeping Your Shit Together, for every attendee at LTV Conf, which happened last week, a couple weeks ago. Sherry spoke there, and Bean Ninjas bought copies of the book for everyone, so I just wanted to thank them. And that if you run an online business and you're in need of bookkeeping, they function in Australia, US, Canada, UK, and New Zealand. You should check out beanninjas.com for more info about them. The other thing is Sherry and I have wrapped up filming for a video boot camp for founders and their significant others. We've called it Date Night. And, you know, in essence, it focuses on the fact that as an entrepreneur, you're short on time, often creativity and energy and attention outside of your work. So we created this video boot camp. It's designed specifically to kind of shortcut the process of connecting and engaging with your partner. And in essence, it's six curated conversations, six outlines for date nights. So there's a handful of videos, and it's basically just like a cheat sheet, a quick instant way to be able to connect with your significant other and without having to do a lot of planning, because we've done the planning for you. So you can head over to zenfounder.com and subscribe to the email list if you want to be the first to hear about that. And with that, let's dive into Sherry's interview with Brad Hart.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this woman, not to wish you
a little more zen in the startup life.
Those days were a mental struggle.
In the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode.
All right. Hey, Brad, it's so good to talk to you today.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me, Sherry.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I got to be a host on, or a guest rather, on Make More Marbles on your podcast, which was quite a treat for me. But I had that conversation with you before I knew, honestly, that much about who you are and the like massive impact that you're having on the world. So I'm really excited to come back and have a second conversation with you and now get to ask you all the questions that I want to ask you.
Well, I really appreciate the kind words, and thank you for everybody for listening today. I am really grateful for the opportunity to share what I have to share.
Yeah. So who are you? What's your...
Who am I?
What do you spend your days doing? Let's ask
Let's
it that
go down
way.
An existential rabbit hole, why don't we? No, I'm just kidding. My name is Brad. I'm from New York. And my mission since I was a small kid was to make friends. I didn't have a whole lot growing up, right? You know, mom had to leave for work. Dad was injured. And I kind of had to figure it out on my own. I was kind of thrown to the wolves a little bit in a way. You know, and a lot of these kids were bigger, older, smarter, faster. I was never going to be any of that. But what I did get pretty good at was relating to people and kind of understanding where they're coming from. I got pretty humorous. I've done a lot more training in that, although I wouldn't say I'm a comedian. I really realized that all power and all opportunity and all functional good that you can create in this world comes as a possibility from being able to reach out to the right people at the right time, with the right offer, with the right deal, with the right value, right? Let's talk practical and tactical. I know your audience is a lot of software engineers, a lot of people who have built and developed companies. I've been an entrepreneur since I was 12 because I had to. I didn't really have a way to survive otherwise. And we actually share a mentor in common, which is Dan Martel, who's awesome and an amazing entrepreneur who sold multiple companies. So for my life, looking back, everything that I've ever done has been in the service of contributing to the larger self. And by that, I mean, you know, I believe that we're all connected in some way. Whether I can prove that scientifically or not, I don't know, right? And maybe one day we will be able to. But for now, I get this deep sense of gratitude and knowing. And, you know, when I'm moving towards a more collaborative enterprise and helping people get where they want to go and building bigger things than I could create myself, that I feel more at peace in myself. So that feeling tends to translate to the people around me, and I want to propagate more of that. So the whole Make More Marbles message, and trust me, I got it wrong a lot of times. I've done real estate, which is successful. I've done hedge funds. And you know, now I'm like, all right, what are my three rules? Help a lot of people, have a lot of fun, make a lot of money. I was only getting number three right. Now it's all about how can I create more for more people.
How did you make most of your money?
Yeah. So when I was 24, I actually inherited some money. I had been pretty successful in real estate up until then. I was surviving and making decent money, you know, six figures a year in New York City, which, you know, at 24 years old, during the worst collapse in finances that we'd ever seen, it was a decent amount. But then, you know, my dad passed away unexpectedly on Mother's Day, actually. So it's been 8 years this week.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I inherited a little bit there, and I started to parlay that into bigger and bigger wins on Wall Street because I had been a trader on kind of the side, which I made more of my full-time job. I hit 3D printing pretty well. We got about a 10x return there. I was in Forbes for that one. Got to introduce the technology to Richard Branson. You never heard of it before. That was super fun. I had a charity fundraiser for what is now WeCharity, was Free the Children. Dr. Craig, Callie Charon and Craig Kilberger. Funny enough, I actually work with another charity that they're partnered with now called the Unstoppable Foundation. So that's a kind of a fun segue 8 years later. And then the hedge fund. The hedge fund was the other big win. We did $1 million in a month between my partners and I at one point, which was really great. And we did 106% overall. So that was like the big wins, but they weren't tied to any sort of fulfillment or grander purpose in life, except I really worked really hard just not to have to deal with the scarcity that I dealt with in my childhood, both of money and relationships. Because I felt like if I got the money piece sorted out, then the relationships would naturally flow. And anybody who has made a lot of money or won the lottery or become a professional sports, you know, just have a lot of money coming in their life at one time will tell you it's not the relationships that you really want to cultivate.
And did you know that as a young person? Because I think, you know, you talk about this early life experience and being, you know, being hungry, hungry for success, hungry to feel differently, hungry to not be wondering where, you know, your next dollar is coming from. And I you know, I'm a Californian, so the world of New York is, you know, far across the country for me. And when you hear about Wall Street and hedge funds, it sounds like, you know, Wolf of Wall Street or these like hyper-aggressive money-making machines. Did you go back and forth between these two versions of yourself? One where you were maybe more aggressive and motivated by money, and then one where you're more motivated by relationships? Or did they coexist in you kind of since the beginning?
I think I always wanted the relationships, and that's what I focus on most now. And the money tends to flow from the relationships. In the beginning, I thought the money was the reason I couldn't have the relationships I wanted. Mm-hmm. So I hyper-focused there. And New York has a way to do that to people. That's just the culture there, right?
It's the motivation.
You know, I don't want to hear what you have to say until there's something in it for me. That's kind of what a lot of people do. And it breeds some really great cultural pieces, right? It's a really great atmosphere to grow into your best and highest self. People show up on time. They do what they say they're going to do. They create together. There's no BS. There's no, you know, fluff in New York. It's very cut and dried, which I can appreciate. And as a young man, I really appreciate it. And moving out here to California, I've been here in a lot of other places for the last 5 or so years, has been a real lesson in just learning how to slow down and let things happen kind of naturally and not be so hard driving all the time. But I still struggle to find that balance, if I'm being honest, because, you know, you can take the boy out of New York, but you can't take the New York out of the boy.
Sure.
So to answer your question, I'm still kind of finding that balance. I think I'm more relationship driven now. But then again, I just see the power that the right relationship at the right time has. Mm-hmm. And I think when you talk about power, because this is a topic that I think very few people really understand in our society, having power is really just the ability to act in a given situation. So there's two sides to it. It's like having those relationships with key people that would be happy to help you at any given time. And then also knowing that you have the capacity and the resourcefulness and the resources within yourself to act and create outcomes for yourself at any given time. So it's kind of this duality between, yes, I want to build these relationships, but I also don't want anybody to be able to say that I can't do something. So that's that kind of freedom ego talking.
Well, sure. It's not easy to build relationships with people who are in power and willing to give you power if they don't perceive you as someone who's capable of acting.
Bingo.
So you have to have that
yourself, right? You have to have that sense of influence. And influence is just a hammer. Really. Influence is just a hammer. What I mean by that is that a hammer can be used to build a house. We build houses all the time for families in need, right? Or it could be used to cave somebody's skull in, right? So who's wielding the influence?
Sure.
So I believe that everybody, especially nowadays, influence is the best tool you could learn how to use on multiple different scales, from one to one to one to many, to impact the world in the way that it needs to be impacted today, because resources aren't the problem anymore. It's what are we doing with our beliefs, our paradigms, our structures, you know, our assumptions that aren't serving us any longer collectively and individually. You know, we see more and more successful people that are so unfulfilled and disconnected that it's crazy. And I think when you ask me the question, like, what's more important now? I think it's like finding the way to be successful within the scope of what's the greater purpose and mission, not just a pile of money or shifting sand around the sandbox, but what are you creating that's really benefiting the world? Because that's where the fulfillment piece is going to come.
And what are those things for you? What do you believe in? What are you sort of doubling down on in terms of your desire to impact the world in a positive way?
Well, that's a great question. And I've run Make More Marbles now for a little over 4 years, and we've reached over 1 million people. And in the beginning, that was one of my sole sources of income. After hedge fund days, I wound that down in 2014. So now it's 2018, and I'm like, all right, what do I want to do with this next? You know, I reached my goal, 20,000 people a day read our stuff, which is wonderful. And I'm grateful, and I get so many wonderful messages. And it's a little overwhelming sometimes, to be perfectly honest, but we're actually changing lives. And people write in every day to say that. And that's a really beautiful thing. And I'm grateful for that.
What ways do people's lives change? I like the specificity. Give me a couple stories.
That's really pressing, because this guy, I'll tell you, you know, I don't want to give away the end of the story. So Brad Newman, great guy. And he's about 27 now. 2 or 3 years ago, he's working at Home Depot, and he was like hiding in his job, like literally in the toilet hiding. And he was looking at a page that we were both on, Daniel DiPiazza, Rich 20 something. And I made a comment. He's like, who's this Brad guy? Who's this guy with my name? And he started following me or whatever. You know, 2 years later, we email every day, by the way. So he's getting all our emails. He's reading all our content. About July of last year, he jumps out of nowhere. I never heard from him once. And he says, hey, I want to come to Tony Robbins with you. And it was like last minute, but it was in New Jersey, and he lived in New Jersey. I'm like, all right, cool. We got tickets, face value. He's like, I don't care. I'm going. I'm like, all right, cool. So he makes a big investment, comes with us, Tony Robbins, makes it so. Great. After Tony Robbins, he has a fire lit under him, as a lot of people do. I've been to 11 Tony events. I brought 100 people now to Tony's events. And you kind of see that first shot out of the gate, and you wonder if it's going to sustain, right? Mm-hmm. Well, with Brad, it's very much sustained. And I can tell you some of the reasons why. He joined the mastermind, which was awesome. So, you know, he was doing that, and he couldn't really afford it at the time. He was making $12 an hour.
Yeah.
But he found a way. He became resourceful, and he jumped into our flow, and new deals started opening up to him. New opportunities started opening up to him. He started using different language. He started using different paradigms and beliefs that he didn't have before. He started borrowing the confidence that he needed to create the evidence that he could be successful, if that makes sense.
He
wasn't waiting around for anybody to tell him that, hey, you need to have evidence in your own life of success, which he had, by the way. He was doing trauma, inserting himself as a, you know, emergency room helper of people in bad situations with drugs and alcohol, like rehab or interventionalist. That's what I meant.
Sorry. Okay.
So he had a skill set, but he just didn't apply it to business. And fast forward, he ends up working with Scott Olford and becoming their sales guy and has closing high ticket programs. So he went from making $12 an hour to, I think he's making over six figures now, but within like 3 months, he was already closing $50,000 to $100,000 in business a month. You know,
had
this exact skill set. He's just applying it to a new era with some new mentors and coaches around him to help him get there.
A lot of your content is helping people with language, with identifying limiting beliefs, with giving ideas and confidence and sort of like energizing folks. Is that a lot of what you're trying to put out there in terms of thinking about the life change?
Right. Strategy is about 20%. I would say it's even more important to understand that we're here to generate, grow, and give. And everybody's at a different level of that. Some people aren't generating money, right? They need to start generating, and they can do that through a job or a business, whatever. Then they need to find ways to grow that money. So that's investing. I have an investment background. I can help people with that, whether it be something relatively low risk like insurance policies or cash flow banking, all the way up to cryptocurrencies and crazy high risk stuff. We do the whole gamut, right? I've touched everything you can think of. And then finally, how do we give it, right? Because if we're not generating, growing, and giving, we haven't closed that loop of wealth creation, right? That wealth doesn't belong to us. It's not our money. It's the money. It's out there and ready for us to be good stewards of it. And the funny thing is, the more flows through your life, the more you are taken care of, but also the more you can take care of others. Now you can direct that wealth in the ways that you feel is appropriate, but you have to become a wise steward of wealth. And that's really what we're doing. And your wealth starts with how are you using your time, your attention, your energy? How are you using the money that you have? How can you earn more money? How can you create systems around this whole process so that money happens more effortlessly and you can charge more and have more time? They're all topics we touch on. It's not one thing for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Especially if you're emailing every day. It's a lot of content.
Yeah, it's a lot of content. But people appreciate it because we're consistent. Then they show, you know, we see that we can be consistent, right? And we start talking to them like, okay, what if you just get 1% better at something every day? You know, yeah. In a year, what would that be? They say 365%. Well, it's really not, because compounding is the most powerful force in the universe. Ask Warren Buffett, you know, ask Einstein. It's 3,778% better after a year.
What are your favorite ways to give?
So we are very practical and tactical when it comes to giving. We want people to have an experience because some people have time, some people have money, some people have neither, some people have both. We want to create really low barrier to entry experiences that people can come in and hang out and do some giving with us. So I'll give you some examples. Through the Greatness Foundation, which is my dear friend Mike Sherbikov's founder, and Jenny Scholl runs the day-to-day operations, we've brought several hundred, maybe thousands of people now on actual mission trips. So about 17, 18 house builds in Mexico, for example. So we'll go down on a Friday, we'll have the pile of wood and the tools and the foundation laid out. By Sunday, this family that was living on dirt and tarps and sticks, you know, in a little makeshift hut, now has a home to live in. Now they have a shot. Like a real shot. And that's part of our larger mission, which is to light the fuse for individuals in the world. And the fuse is an acronym, right? It's food, utilities, shelter, and education for the most number of people possible. And I'll tell you, like, whether you come down there and get sponsored, because we do that sometimes, or whether you come down there and pay your own way, which is not expensive, a few hundred dollars, and that includes meals and lodging, and it all goes directly to the build and your sustenance thereof, you can't help but have your life change. I cry almost every time. I'm shedding tears on Sunday when that family that was living literally in dirt and mud is now have a home, because now they can go to school. Now they can do the things that they want to do. And it's great to give to one of those things, but they really need all those things to meet their basic needs so that they can have a better quality of life. Mm-hmm. So that's where it really all comes together for me. And if everybody just did their part towards that, the world would change overnight. It doesn't have to be us doing it all. It doesn't have to be you out there doing it all. If everybody just did a little bit of that and gave back, not only would they be more fulfilled, but they would see that direct impact is possible. We don't have to give to these giant organizations that maybe 7 to 10% of the money actually ends up in the hands of the people that need it. The rest go to marketing, big salaries. Not that I'm beating them up. I'm just saying there's a better system now. We have more tools that we can use as individuals to connect with the causes and sources of wealth and giving opportunities that we now have that we didn't have before.
I feel like I'm maybe just kind of asking the same question, but like, how did you get to this? Because that's not the conclusion that many wealthy entrepreneurs have come to. It's not necessarily what most of our peers are doing. And I've come to this background of service from a more sort of traditional faith background, or I'm just curious, like, what happened inside of you that you put that together for yourself?
I got everything I wanted and I was miserable. Simple. And most people will never realize that in their lifetime because they're always chasing the carrot.
How did you know you were miserable?
Well, at May of 2013, when we made that $1,040,000 and I'm toasting our, you know, partners on the roof of the Gansevoort Hotel, and I immediately felt like, oh my God, I climbed the wrong mountain. I don't like what I'm doing. I don't like why I'm doing it. I'm not any happier than I was a minute ago. Now that we made all this money, it's actually overwhelming and scary. Mm-hmm. But I really don't understand what life's about. And that led me to get into a bunch of bad relationships and do a bunch of travel. But no matter where I went, there I was. And then, you know, I started spiraling and I had a breakup and it just got worse and worse and worse until finally I had to really come to the terms that there was something within me I had to grow. I had to be a person that could actually take care of people, not just make a lot of money.
What had to change inside of you for you to be able to do that?
I had to forgive myself. That was one. I had to forgive myself. I had to realize, hey, I'm just a human like everybody else figuring it out. I'm smart, but that's a liability. A lot of people listening probably relate to that.
Yeah.
Is that the smarter you are, the more disconnected you feel, right? You start to make up stories in your head that everybody around you is not up to. They couldn't possibly understand what you're going through. They can.
It's death by special. Yep.
They can feel when you're not showing up in the way that you want to, desperately want to, like maybe really desperately want to connect to other people. That's the juice of life. Before we had economies, before we had money, before we had all this stuff, we were just humans in tribes. That's what we really want at the end of the day, is to feel like everything's going to be okay because we're with our friends, relatives, buddies, lovers, families, whatever it is. What is important to you? Like Jessica and I, my girlfriend and I are constantly reminding each other, like, what are we grateful for? What do we have? Because, you know, she grew up in a very affluent place, Montreal and then La Jolla, California. And you can't do much better than that.
Right.
I grew up in a little bit worse circumstances, but my life now is amazing. And I have this beautiful family / community that I've grown into that's accepted me mostly with open arms and no judgment, which is wonderful. And there's certainly people that don't care to be around me. And I can't please everybody. And I'm coming to terms with that. But I think as we go through life, success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. And if I'm going to be a leader, I want to be a leader that helps create leaders. And I want to be a leader that aligned and fulfilled in myself and my health and wealth relationships, and not focus so much just on money, which is only going to get me so many things. It can only solve money problems, which are, you know, it's valuable and important, but there's so many other pieces to life. What about your health? What about your relationships? What do you care about? And I'm not saying it has to be what I care about, but
sure.
If you have a driving purpose, it really helps you fuel all of the joy and gratitude that life has to offer.
I think you recently spent about a month on a retreat in Bali. Do I have that correct?
I was there for 2 weeks. I'm going back for 10 days in November. I'm sorry, in a month in November, of which 10 days we're doing another retreat, which is going to be tied to a mentorship program. I'm doing less and less of that. The idea is to scale down to make more marble strips and scale up the other businesses that we're doing, Amazon, yeah. Blockchain, and stuff.
Well, I ask about retreats because I've found those to be fairly profound in my own life in terms of the process of being able to step out of the frenetic and the day-to-day and the busyness of relationships and sort of the onslaught of social media or whatever you want to put on that list that kind of burdens you. But sure. To be on a retreat and be in a quieter, perhaps more contemplative or spiritual kind of space. And I guess I'm wondering if those kinds of experiences are what help you to keep the core of what you're after close to the front of mind.
You know, I'm not going to stand here and tell anybody I have it all figured out because I don't. I don't think anybody does. And the people that say they do, maybe they're trying to sell you something. But when I go on a retreat, I'm really unplugged. In fact, I try to do them as often as possible where I have like a week or just, you know, a couple of days even where I'm just off the grid. I really get back to what's simple and important.
Mm-hmm.
Like all simple things about life that we overlook because we're reacting to everything. Everything that wants our attention, every email, every, you know, a little stupid red dot on Facebook that wants your attention because it's the color of blood, by the way.
Natural alarm bells go off.
Especially like, if you guys are following Dan Martell, you guys are creating the future, but you're also creating addiction. And I'm very versed in addiction between, you know, the end of that story, Brad Newman making a lot of money. He moved in with me. We live in this 5-bedroom house overlooking the ocean in California now. So his life changed drastically inside a year. It's kind of fun. And he's like a perfect mirror for me because he's like 5 years behind me in age. And also like I see him going through the things that I was going through. And that's so fulfilling and deeply gratifying to me because he started out as somebody I'm mentoring, but he's actually now a mirror and a mentor to me in certain ways as well. It's just a really beautiful experience, which I never would have had. I never built this business. Or started
a creative space in your life to listen to someone who's 5 years behind you.
Yeah. Well, and I just know what I felt like back then going through the things I went through. And it's just amazing. I don't know if we got off the topic of the question, but I wanted to close that loop because I think it's a really important kind of happy ending. And he's making more now in a month than he used to, than the whole mastermind cost for a year, which is a substantial amount. So I'm pretty happy about that. And it's not because I think he needs a bajillion dollars. In fact, I don't know that he even has a plan of what to do with it all. But the fact that he's making forward momentum in his life and he can master that, and now he can help other people master it, that's freedom, right? If he can create wealth and serve people at a high level and deliver that value, I mean, that's massive.
Yeah.
That's massive. Then you become part of the solution, right? You become part of the solution. No, you can't be poor enough to make other people rich. You can't be miserable enough to make other people happy. It's not a function of duality. It's a function of zero to whatever number you want to go, right? Yeah. There's only so far you can fall in this world. But by lifting others up, you can create more for everybody. And that's really the Make More Marbles message at its core. It's not grabbing for what's there. It's making more for everybody.
Yeah. And I didn't prep you for this question, so feel free to not answer.
No, please. Curveballs, appreciate it.
But how has that changed your relationship with your parents? I know your father's now passed, but you're obviously coming at life from quite a different perspective than they were as adults.
And, oh, for sure.
And you have more wealth and resources. I mean, what does that feel like? With your parents?
Yeah, my mom, she worked every day from age 13 to support her brothers and sisters. She's the oldest of seven. My grandfather was a traveling salesman. My grandmother was addicted to prescription medications. They had seven kids. You know, she had to go and work. That was her responsibility. And then when my dad got hurt at 2 years old, same story. She had to go work. She wasn't around. As an adult now, I have a much better relationship with my mom, although she's not doing well health-wise. I'm able to provide for her in the way that I wasn't able to before. And that's a really wonderful thing. But she also is very grateful and grounded and religious, and she doesn't need a whole lot, which is nice. Like if she can feel healthy and have a good vacation here and there, she's super happy. And she
kind
wants
of
to
what
pray
she wants.
Anywhere. Yeah. Like she's got a simple life that she loves, and she doesn't need to be bothered with Facebook and email. Like she just got an email address. She didn't learn to text until 2 years ago. Now she's sending emojis. It's like she discovered fire. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's like out of control. Was your dad alive long enough to see this level of success for you?
No, he wasn't, but he was my biggest fan. And we went through some ups and downs. Don't get me wrong. Like, we got in a fist fight that ended in him getting dragged away by the cops when I was 16 and I had to leave home. And we had our ups and downs for sure.
Yeah.
My grandmother was actually instrumental in piecing that relationship back together. She was like, I went through two world wars where I didn't know if anybody was coming home, Spanish influenza, this stuff you got going on, it ends today.
Surely we can handle this.
Yeah. You know, and that was, I love my grandmother. She was 97 when she passed, so she would have made it well over 100 if she didn't fall. But she was an incredible lady, just an incredible lady. And I give a lot of credit to, you know, my grandparents and my great grandparents and uncles and all these people that kind of gave me that distilled wisdom throughout the years, even though they weren't around to give it to me themselves. Like, I heard the stories and saw what they did, and their actions, you know, stayed moving. I'm actually the 13th generation in a small little town, Long Island. It's kind of crazy to think about.
Oh, interesting.
1690, we've been there. Yeah, we have houses in our family that are like over 200 years old. And it's interesting to consider that. But then you also have the other side of it, which is, are you living your life here now, alive people, or are you living what the dead people wanted? Which is, those two don't align, right? You can't compare the world of 2018 to the world of even 1985 when I was born.
I do get the sense, though, that founders who have these early life experiences where there's been some adversity, that tends to fuel this desire to make the world better for other people. Like, you know what feels like at this very basic, visceral level.
The two biggest motivators that anybody will ever have are pain and pleasure. And now, as a human race, like, I understand that I'm creating a paradox here. You know, it's like, if we don't have those dualities, we won't have the contrast by which to value things. Mm-hmm. And my girlfriend and I, we have conversations about this all the time. She grew up relatively affluent with a very successful family, and she's not always as driven as she wants to be. And she shames herself for that. I'm like, don't shame yourself for that. Are you kidding me? This is the way it should be. We should be happy and fulfilled and healthy and want to do things, not feel like we need to be running away from pain to do things. And both are excellent motivators. You just got to learn, like, how do you use that, knowing, you know, or crazy, stupid human tricks, which is really like lizard, monkey, human. It's not just human.
Sure.
To get yourself to take action. And it's a really simple formula. Things like aversion therapy and positive reinforcement and visualizing and meditating and priming. These are all things that you can train the monkey and the lizard to do what the human wants. Otherwise, they're going to be fighting against you at all times.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean like your lizard brain, your monkey brain, and your higher human neocortex.
It's an interesting discussion, I think, for me. You know, my husband and I are both from households where there was very limited finances and no shortage of hardship. And now we have achieved a level of success where we're now raising children that have only known affluence. Mm. It doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not going to comment.
I don't think there's any nobility in poverty.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any, I'm going to say it unequivocally. I don't think there's any nobility in poverty. And the more I see people re-traumatize themselves with their struggle story, myself included, I think the worse it gets.
Mm. So it's not a story you tell often.
I don't say that. I definitely catch myself saying it from time to time because for years it worked. It helped me to connect to the people who I wanted to help. Mm-hmm. But now at this stage, I'm so overwhelmed with incoming. I have to be more clear about who I want to play with and who I don't and why. I'm telling more of a reinvention story.
Yeah.
You know, I'm happy to
tell you. What's the essence of that story that you believe?
The reinvention story is hedge fund guy, very successful, turns his life around in service of humanity. That's the story. And it's bare bones. And I think more of those stories can relate to people who are already successful or have some modicum of success, mm-hmm. which are the people I want to play with anyway.
Unfortunately, the people who are now searching for meaning.
Right. I mean, looking for meaning that's greater than themselves and to make an impact greater than themselves. But if I have to convince people that money is good or that sales is good or that marketing is good, we're way off. Like, I'm not there anymore. And I think any successful person that's had a career that's long enough and working with people, like, you start to get really frustrated with having to slow the bus down for other people all the time and to live in their story. Because I take on everybody's stuff. I'm a very emotional, energetically unclean, triggered empath.
Yeah.
I'm a fidgety, neurotic.
It's messy. Life's messy for you.
And when I'm around people who are like struggling, I tend to start to like take on their stuff, whether I like it or not. I don't have the gift of being able to be completely dispassionate about what they're experiencing. I feel every bit of it, so I have to feel it less.
How do you maintain those emotional filters?
I don't know that I do it well at all times. Okay. I'm working on that. That's a current struggle for me. Spending less time with people that drain my batteries. That's my basic, and just feeling okay with that.
Yeah. Unapologetic about that.
Yeah. It's just, I got to take care of me first. If I fall apart, what the hell good am I to anybody else?
Right. There's lots of ways to serve that don't involve like the long suffering, enduring of someone who's not pulling their weight emotionally or relationally.
And it'll make you insane. There's so many opportunities for connection these days and for business and for life and for love and for this and for that. We have more opportunities as humans than we've ever had before. And it's just overwhelming when you really see the scope of it. And I'm in my very narrow lanes and I'm like trying to stay there, but I get pulled different directions all the time. And I'm not saying I have this 100% figured out, but if you are of the personality that is like me, that's very people oriented and focused, and you take on people's stuff, you got to make that clear time. And that's what I do every morning. It's like 2-3 hours, whether I need it or not, just to get right with myself.
Mm-hmm. Some quiet alone time.
Yeah. And that's usually 6 to 9 in the morning. You won't hear much from me for 6 to 9 in the morning.
And what do you do during that time?
Well, I have all these things. It's like a menu. It's up on the wall over here. You want to read some of it?
Sure.
This is a menu. This is not, I order every item on the menu every day. This is like all the things that I could do. And I think it's useful. I'll yank it off the wall and bring it over. So these are some of the things I do in the morning. You know, 2-3 hours. Aero yoga, that's a new thing I took up. Meditation priming, hydrating, writing, running, incantations, which are like, you know, affirmations, but with more clarity about it's already created. Workout, I always have to do something physical every day. A journal, music, lemon and salt water, reading, fiction, nonfiction. I've been reading a book about ancient Rome, which is really fascinating. And like each book is 1,100 pages and there's 5 of them in the series. So I've been really geeking out on that. And it's fictional, nice. But like historically accurate too. Like
kind of wakes up the intellect.
Might have lived, yeah, at that time. The best lesson is that they're still dealing with the same stuff that we're dealing with now, just with different technology, different times, different knowledge and understanding the world, different mythology. It's just really fascinating to see that. I recommend it if you're like looking to get out of your own stuff for a minute and just see that everybody's had problems at all times and they're all us. Every one of the problems are lizard, monkey, human problems. I drink coffee, but I'm trying to get down there a little bit. I'm going on a retreat next week to kind of kick that habit when I'm not going to be around people so I don't turn into an asshole. ashwagandha, vitamin D, that's important. You know, shower, ablutions, all that good stuff. Afternoon, lunch, I can go into what I eat, but that's not, I don't think very, did you just want to know about the morning routine?
Yeah, it just sounds like this, you know, I think when you talk about being somebody who is so engaged with people, and it sounds like you spend your life both talking with people, working with people, serving people, doing business with people.
Yeah, the vast majority of my time is spent with other people.
But that you found these ways to center individually and that those are really important. So I'm just curious. You know, thank you for sharing what those practices are.
Of course. Everybody who I work with, you know, when I do mentor entrepreneurs, investors, and philanthropists, everybody I work with, I make sure they have a routine, a daily routine that's locked in with a menu of things that they can do so that they can feel okay. Because I'm not banking on feeling okay the second I wake up every morning. That's just not the truth. The truth is I'm going to feel how I feel. And I don't have any control over that. I can work on it and I can try to reduce the stress and anxiety and make sure I take more vacations. But I'm going to wake up and feel how I feel.
Yeah.
The trick is in life is to be able to prime yourself then from that space and say, hey, I don't choose to feel this way. I'm not going to let my brain dictate how I feel. I'm going to get to where I need to be to serve the people I need to serve. So now the day is not happening to me, it's happening for me. Right. Yeah. I think that's the most important thing anybody can do is just show up correctly.
Yeah. Show up with some openness and willingness to. So we talked about a lot of great things. And I really appreciate your time and
my pleasure.
I'm just stoked to see what you're doing in the world. So it's kind of like, thank you for being who you are and for putting out the level of service and just willingness to be connected to other people that you do. Because I think that connection is something that so many people long for, but find difficult to navigate or difficult to get started. Mm. So it sounds like that's really core to who you are and what you attribute your success to, and also something that you're working to give to other people.
Yeah. And if everybody could just be the best version of themselves, the world would heal itself. It just would.
Yeah.
But right now we have a lot of hurt people hurting other people and continuing that cycle of hurt. I've seen it in my own life where I've broken some cycles that have plagued my family for generations. Mm-hmm. Alcohol is a good example of one. I've been sober for the most part for 6 years now, 7 years almost. My best friend and my dad died from that. That's just one thing that didn't allow me to connect with the people I wanted to connect with. And I was ultimately, it's a very depressive cyclical substance that wreaks a lot of havoc in areas you don't even realize. So you know, one of the things we did was create a no alcohol challenge video that went to become the most successful video on YouTube. And that's not exactly the demographic I'm even looking to serve, but it was useful to me and I felt it was useful to others. And then thousands of other people wrote in and they're like, hey, this helped me. I was like, that's great. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Now you can be free of that. You have the choice. It's not a judgment. It's just, hey, this is another way to live life that might be even better for you. You know, that's what you want. So stuff like that. I just like to have a platform to create stuff like that where I can share what I'm going through, which would hopefully, because I don't care. I don't have any shame about it. Like, I'm just happy to share. If it's helpful to somebody, awesome. Yeah. I don't need there to be anything. Actually, I got an email today from a guy like, I don't understand your website. I don't see what you sell. I'm like, I don't sell a lot. I'm not asking you to buy anything. I just want you to like take in some of these things I'm learning so you don't have to struggle with them too. That's it.
Yeah.
If you need more help, reach out to me. Maybe I'll work with you, but probably not at this point. The calendar is a little full these days.
Well, in the spirit of full calendars, thank you so much for your time and again for what you're doing in the world. And I think it's amazing. And I can't wait to see the next few iterations of you and what you offer to the world.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Sherry. And I'm just grateful that you're doing this because I think these conversations need to happen. You're asking great questions. And I know that you have a lot of people that listen to you and respect you that, you know, they might be going down that road. You're up that mountain that they may ultimately find is very fulfilling. And I hope that that's the outcome. But if they don't find it fulfilling, maybe reach out, especially successful people who just need a little bit of a tweak or like, hey, you know, how do I really nail this target of a fulfilled and happy life?
Yeah.
I'd like to talk to more people like that. Those are the people I want to reach out to. And they can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/Brad Hart. They can find me at makemoremarbles.com. Jump on the email list. We'll give you a quick little couple gifts and things you check on the website. I'd be grateful to connect, you know, and just kind of share what I'm learning.
All right. Well, fantastic. Lots of great material out there for folks.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.